Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. The makers of Hallmark greeting cards present The Strange Story of John Erickson, starring Roger Pryor. Now to preside over our program, here is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. When a man would rather go to prison than give up the work he loves, he's either crazy or a genius. It will be up to you to decide as you hear the strange story we have for you tonight. Perhaps the most amazing thing about our story is the fact that it actually happened. It's true. I know you'll like it, and you'll like the star, Roger Pryor. Welcome again to the Hallmark program, Roger.
Thanks, Les.
Feeling like a genius tonight?
I'm afraid not, Les, but you, in your way, are a genius.
Well, you interest me. Tell me more.
Well, you're a genius at making people feel at home. You always have just the right word for the occasion.
Oh, you should be talking about Hallmark cards. And do you know there's a Hallmark card for every occasion you can think of?
I do know. A friend of mine found one to send me after I got off the air last week.
He did? What did it say?
It said, very simply, hope you're better soon.
Well, here's your chance, Roger. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you on the Reader's Digest radio edition the story of a man you will not easily forget. The strange story of John Erickson, starring Roger Pryor. This is the story of John Erickson. And if you never heard of him, that's because we sometimes neglect our men of genius. He was born in Sweden in the 19th century. And when he was just a boy, he used to make scale drawings for hours at a time. When he was 9 years old, he constructed a perfect miniature sawmill, which worked. When he was 10, he constructed a pumping engine to draw water from a mine driven by a windmill. And when he reached manhood, he came to England. It is there that we meet him, in his workshop.
Now that three-inch screw...
For you.
Oh, Mary. Is it noontime already? Oh,
it's 2:30.
2:30? My goodness, you'd better eat.
John, I've eaten. This is for you.
Oh, well, thank you, Mary. Mary, did you ever think of the limitations of the paddle wheel steamer?
No, John.
Oh, it's most unsatisfactory. The only virtue it has is that it can move directly into the wind, which a sailing ship cannot.
John.
Hmm?
Do you know how much money we owe?
Who's talking about money? Well, we're talking about a paddle wheel steamer. Now, it's obviously vulnerable in combat.
John.
Huh?
We owe a very great deal of money.
I don't doubt it, but let's stick to the subject. The paddle wheel steamer is cumbersome and slow whenever you try to put it to commercial use.
John.
What is it?
Do you know how much money we owe?
No, I haven't any idea.
We owe more than 400 pounds.
Oh, that's quite a bit, isn't it?
Oh, it's all the money there is.
Are you terribly sorry you married such an impractical fellow?
Oh, darling, I'm just terribly sorry I didn't bring him a bigger dowry.
I do what I can, my dear. I work in this room. I make things. I take some metal. I take some wood. I take some tools. And with them, I make machines which never existed before. When I do that, you know how I feel, Mary.
Wonderful, I know.
Oh, like a magician. Like a magician right out of the old fairy tales working miracles.
What's this invention, John?
Oh, well, this may not really be an invention at all. I'm trying to arrive at something better than the paddle wheel steamer. And this little machine may turn out to be a small part of my total mechanism. Or it may not. It's a long-range project. I'm just experimenting.
Oh, I see.
What's the matter, Mary?
Nothing. Why?
Oh, anybody can see you're disappointed. Even a single-minded inventor like your husband. What's the matter?
It's money, John.
Money?
Yes, I was hoping this would be a simple little invention that would get us out of debt.
How much did you say we owe?
More than 400 pounds.
Oh, that is awful. But I'm afraid there's nothing I can do about
it. John, you could work.
Work?
Yes.
But don't you think I am working, darling? What do you suppose I do here in the workshop every day?
John, that's not the kind of work I mean.
It's work.
It doesn't bring in any money.
I know. This is a ridiculous society.
But there are jobs to be had, John, for the asking.
Yes, of course. There are jobs that pay money, but pay nothing else.
But money's all important at this moment.
Darling, look.
Yes, John.
I love you.
I know, John.
But you'll have to learn, Mary, that nothing is all important to me except what goes on here in this workshop.
I know that too, John, and I don't mind. I knew when you were married.
Women never know. I said my work here meant everything to me, and I meant it. I meant everything. Why can't you accept that? Every day's work that I do elsewhere is a precious day lost from my work here in the shop.
All right, John.
I'm sorry.
It's all right, John. I'll do what I can. But we've stretched our credit. I don't know what to say to Mr. Lovejoy and Armstrong's pressing us, but I'll try to hold them off, darling.
We'll get money. We always have. Something will happen.
All right, John. Are you right through here?
Yes.
I'll leave you alone, then.
Mrs. Erickson, you can make no payment.
I'm sorry. We have no money, Mr. Lovejoy.
May I be frank?
Please.
I've seen no evidence your husband's trying to make any money.
I was afraid of this. My husband is a very much misunderstood man, Mr. Lovejoy.
I don't misunderstand him, Mrs. Erickson. Your husband's a genius. The very worst sort of man to do business with. But you know, I rather like trying to do business with geniuses. I feel it'd be rather a privilege.
You're very kind.
Well, I try to be. May I see your husband?
Well, he's in the workshop.
And where is that?
Well, it's right next door, but in the next room, but he's not to be disturbed.
Well, this is one time I'll have to be unkind enough to disturb him. After all, he owes me £150.
I haven't the right to stop you. Let me announce you.
Thank you. Please do.
John?
Hello, Mary.
This is Mr. Lovejoy. He wants to talk to you, John.
Well, I'm very busy.
Oh, he's one of our creditors, John.
Oh, come in, sir.
Thank you.
I'll leave you.
Sit down, Mr. Lovejoy.
Thank you.
Now, let me see. Which one of my creditors are you?
Well, my firm provided you with the materials for the workshop here.
Oh, I have met only your salesman. A very fine line of materials you carry, Mr. Lovejoy.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. And not to beat around the bush too much, we'd like to be paid for them.
How much do I owe you?
£150.
I see. Well, I'm afraid that payment is out of the question right now, Mr. Lovejoy. I simply haven't got the money.
Mr. Erickson, before I ask you a certain question, I want you to know I deeply respect you. I know about some of your inventions. I've heard how, at the age of 14, you had 600 Swedish soldiers under you when you were employed to run levels on the Gota Canal.
Oh, you know about that job, do you?
Yes. And I respect you profoundly, Mr. Erickson. I want that fact established right away. But it is my plain duty to bring you down to earth. Did you ever hear of debtor's prison?
Debtor's prison?
Yes.
Oh, surely no firm that deals in such beautiful supplies and materials would send an inventor to debtor's prison.
It has been done. But even if we did not do it, there are surely others to whom you owe money, aren't there?
Oh, there must be. My wife tells me we owe more than £400.
I know where you can get £500.
Really? Where?
There's a little job of work, or rather a big job of work, actually, which is worth that amount to the Liverpool and Manchester Company.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant that you knew where I could get that amount of money quickly without interrupting my work here.
Life is never that pleasant, Mr. Erickson.
Well, Mr. Lovejoy, I'm afraid I'm not interested.
I'm sorry to hear that. I've warned you about debtor's prison, Mr. Erickson.
I will not give up my work in this shop.
Very well. I will tell my partners. The decision will be theirs. I'll make no plea for leniency. Certainly not for a man who refuses to try to earn money to pay off, even when the method of earning it involves invention.
Invention?
Yes, of course. Well, I am sorry to have taken up your valuable time, Mr. Erickson.
Oh, wait. What is all this about invention?
The Liverpool and Manchester Company are giving a prize of £500 to anyone who can perfect a locomotive that can go 10 miles an hour, draw 20 tons, or 70 miles.
Well, why didn't you say so?
I did say so.
Well, you never did. This is... Oh, locomotive is nothing new, but such a locomotive as they want will involve half a dozen different inventions.
Exactly. That's why I thought you'd be just the man for it.
No, you're certainly correct.
It's a competition, you know. There'll be others trying to win.
Oh, that doesn't frighten me.
Unfortunately, the other contestants are well along in their work. You have only 7 weeks in which to do this job.
I can do it.
I certainly hope so. For my own sake.
Your sake? What do you get out of it?
£150.
Oh, yes.
By Jove, I believe that as soon as you started thinking about the inventions involved, you forgot all about the money.
You're quite right, Dr. Lovejoy.
John, do you think it'll be all right?
Oh, don't
don't worry, Mary.
Oh, I tried when I saw Stevenson's locomotive coming here to finish line.
It's perfectly all right, Mary. I'm quite confident.
How much later was your locomotive to start?
2 hours after Stevenson's. So you see, darling, I have almost 2 hours to tie his record. Anything under that beats him and wins the prize for me.
There was a man looking for you at the house today, John. A sheriff.
I'm not worried now. It took Stevenson's rocket over 4 hours to go the 70 miles.
That's terribly fast.
We'll wait until you see how fast my novelty goes.
John Mary.
Who?
The sheriff.
Of course I won't hide. Hello there. I believe you're looking for me.
Are you John Erickson?
I am.
Can you pay me £115 to discharge your debt to Fred Armstrong?
Not at this moment, I can't.
Then I'll have to take you to the debtor's prison.
Oh, no. Oh,
just a moment, Sheriff. We're engaged in a test here to see whether my locomotive will go faster than Stevenson's. If it does, I'll get £500 to discharge the debt.
Oh. And how long do I have to wait?
Perhaps an hour. Certainly not more than 2 hours.
Well, I'll give you that much time. But I've got to stay with you.
Oh, John, will that work?
Oh, I think so. I had to finish in so close to the deadline, I never had a chance to test it. I know it will work if all the material in it is strong enough to stand the strain I'm putting
on. Hello there, Mr. Erickson.
Oh, hello, Mr. Graham.
Well, are you still confident, Mr. Erickson?
Quite confident, Mr. Graham. Oh, Mr. Graham, you've met my wife?
Yes, how do you do, Mrs. Erickson?
How do you do?
And this is my financial advisor, Mr. Sheriff.
How do you do?
How you do, sir?
Mr. Graham is the president of the Liverpool and Manchester Company. He's the man who's going to give me that £500, Mr. Sheriff.
If you can beat that splendid record that Stevenson's locomotive made, I am. Well, what do you say, everybody? Shall we go up on the hill and watch for Mr. Erickson's locomotive?
Well, yes.
By all means. Coming, Mr. Sheriff?
Don't worry. I'll be with you every minute, Mr. Erickson. It's cold up here.
Oh, you find it cold, Mr. Sheriff? We have a long time to wait, you know.
Not so long, not if my calculations are correct.
Wait, what was that?
Why, it's a whistle.
It's the whistle of my locomotive, Mr. Graham.
Are you sure?
John!
It should be coming around the bend in a moment.
My goodness, why, that'll be a full hour better than Stevenson's time.
You're a very lucky man, Miss Harrison.
It is.
I win.
You win when it reaches the finish line.
No need to worry about that, Mr. Sheriff. I win. I win.
Oh, John, it's blown up.
I'm sorry, Mr. Erickson. Stevenson wins.
Oh, no, Mr. Graham, no. Listen to me. The locomotive performed. I said it wouldn't. It did. I was afraid of the materials I put into the locomotive, but I had to take what I could get in a hurry. The materials were at fault, not the principal. My locomotive performed better than Stevenson's.
Your locomotive did not cross the finish line, Mr. Erickson. Stevenson wins.
Too bad, Mr. Erickson. I guess you'll have to come with me.
Just a moment with the second act of tonight's story from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine, presented by the makers of Hallmark cards, America's favorite greeting cards. But first, here's a message we know you will all be interested in.
This is Cy Harris. How are you tonight? You know, often it's hard to put your feelings into words. It seems the more I care about someone, the more awkward I am about expressing myself. And that's why I think Hallmark cards are such a help to friendliness. You'll find that Hallmark cards say just what you want to say, the way you want to say it, and they're really beautiful. I think you'll feel rather pleased with yourself when you send Hallmark cards and hear your friends say, "That was a wonderful card you sent me." Besides, you know what folks will think when they turn the card over and see those three little words that mean so much. A Hallmark card. Those three words tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. And now once again, here's your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Our program continues now with the second act of tonight's story, The Strange Story of John Erickson, starring Roger Pryor. John Erickson is working again. But now his workshop is in America. It is to America that he has come after some money from one of his inventions has delivered him from debtor's prison. In the new world, his hopes are high.
Lunch, John.
Lunch? Well, I'm ready for it this time, Mary.
Oh, here's the mail.
In a minute. I'm more interested in this sandwich right now.
You know, John, you've changed.
Changed, Mary? How?
I don't know, but since we've been here in America, You've had more vitality.
Oh, this whole country's filled with vitality. I can feel it all the time.
Billy, you never leave this workshop, and in here it looks just as it looks in England.
It's what's inside a man that counts, I suppose. And here in America, what I feel inside me is enthusiasm and hope.
I'm glad, John.
Well, it's a country where you can have hope. People get things done here. You remember how the Lords of the Admiralty in England treated my idea of this wheel propeller?
I remember.
They're very interested, of course, old man. If the power were applied at the stern, it would be absolutely impossible to make vessels stir.
Oh, that's the way they are in England. Set in their ways, Sachi. But in this country, well, we'll see the proof very shortly. We'll see what the Navy Department has to say about this screw propeller. I should hear from them soon. This is a country where they know a good thing when they see it.
Well, I hope so, John. I hope we've come to a place where you'll get recognition for what you are.
Do you know something, Mary?
What?
I hope so, too. That's strange, do you know? I never cared before. I've worked at things that I had to work at, but if nobody paid any attention, well, I wasn't looking for attention, so I didn't mind at all. Oh, but now I do mind. I'm afraid I want some praise, Mary. Ever since that rotten piece of luck with the locomotive, I've wanted people to think well of me. It would mean so much.
Oh, they will, John.
It would mean that when I had bent over this bench until my back ached and my eyes blurred, it had not been for nothing. It would mean that you had not gone without pretty clothes for nothing. It would give new meaning to these very sandwiches that you bring to me every day. If someone would only say, well done, John Erickson.
Tired, John. Eat, John.
Oh, I've had enough. Where's the mail?
Right here.
Thanks. Bill. These are the people who never forget us, Mary, our creditors. Bill. Oh, Mary.
Yes, John?
It's from the Navy Department.
Oh, John.
Dear Mr. Erickson, your screw propeller is very interesting, of course, but we cannot see any practicality in it. We feel that if the power were applied at the stern... Oh, Mary, the same old story.
John, do you realize we owe more than $1,000?
I suppose so. America. It's a great country, but for us, it's just like England. Well, Mary... They're using my screw propeller on the principal.
Oh, John, wonderful.
Not so wonderful. The conditions that they laid down are humiliating. They scarcely acknowledge me as inventor. I seriously question I'll be paid.
Oh, John, I'm so sorry.
I know, Mary, I'm sorry for your sake, too, but there you are. There we both are. We'll never get recognition from America.
John Erickson, the Navy Board is ready to listen to you.
Thank you, Admiral. But there is very little for me to say. You have the drawings that I have made. You've studied them. You can see their practicality.
I can't.
But the reason I have brought these drawings to you at this time is because of what I hear that the Confederates are doing.
You mean constructing that ship, the Merrimack?
Yes, sir, I do. I understand the construction has been nearly completed. If the Merrimack is at all practical, and I think it is.
I don't.
If it is at all practical, it spells destruction to the wooden ships of the Federal Navy, unless we have a ship that can defeat the Merrimack.
And you think your ship here, this Monitor, can do it?
Yes, sir, I do.
This cheese box on a raft.
This cheese box on the raft, sir, looks as it does because all its vital organs are below the waterline. Where the guns of the Merrimack will not readily put them out of commission. And the revolving turret above makes it possible to aim the guns without changing the course of the ship.
As you would know, Harry, if you'd studied the drawings.
Are we prepared to vote on this matter?
Should I withdraw?
Not unless you please to.
Admiral, I'd like to say that it's a foregone conclusion that we're all against this proposition. Except myself. That's obvious. And because I believe so implicitly in the worth of Mr. Erickson's Monitor, I'd like to ask if there's anything at all that would make you change your mind. Any condition that would make possible the building of this ship.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Well, now, I stand neutral. But I imagine that if you were looking for a compromise, it could be achieved by inserting a clause guaranteeing refund to the government of all money paid out in case the vessel is a failure.
No, that's most unfair to Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Erickson,
Mr. Chairman, my only interest in this is to see to it that the country I have adopted as my own will preserve its union. I don't mind how unfair this condition may be to me. If the monitor is a failure, all the government's money will be paid back. On that condition, I hope you will vote to build the ship.
On that condition, certainly. Amuse yourself.
I vote yes to.
Thank you, gentlemen. Don't keep worrying, Mary.
I don't see how you can be so calm. You know at this moment the Merrimack and the Monitor are battling each other. That maybe the issue has been decided already. Still, you can work.
You know something, Mary.
What?
I'm as excited as you are.
Oh, well, you don't show it.
I don't dare show it, but look, my hands are trembling. Soon we'll know, maybe. I don't suppose so, but maybe. Maybe I'll be recognized. I had a dream when we first came to America, Mary. A dream that here people would care about the work I was doing.
I remember that dream.
It was a sort of a condition I laid down for myself, Mary. If my work could be recognized, if people cared, then I might take time with people. I might leave the workshop once in a while. You and I might have good times.
Oh, but life isn't over yet, you know.
No, Mary, but the dream is. That was a fine condition on which they accepted the idea of building the Monitor, wasn't it? And if the Monitor is a success...
It's got to be.
If it is, no one will think of me.
But if they do think of you...
Then I will stop working. We will have good times.
John, what's that?
People. Sound of people.
John, you don't suppose it...
No, I suppose it's a fire in the block.
No, they're coming here, John.
John Erickson.
Come in.
There you are, Mr. Erickson. You remember me?
Yes, the man on the naval board. The only one who believed in my monitor.
Yes, and I've come to tell you. I've come from the White House itself to tell you.
What?
The Monitor has just defeated the Merrimack in battle.
John, isn't it wonderful?
It's great. It's just as I expected. I told him this would happen.
I've spoken with the president. He wants to see you. You'll hear from him as you're hearing from that crowd outside. You're a hero, John Erickson. The whole nation will be honoring you.
Mary, that's true, but now that the honors have come, I still feel the same way. I never knew until now that even after I was applauded, I'd still care more about what lies ahead than what lies behind. I'm working on an experiment for a whole new type of engine. Oh, there's so much work to be done, Mary.
But John! All right, dear. I'll get your phone, Richard.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roger Pryor will be back in just a moment. But first, here is Cy Harris again.
Recently, one of my neighbors showed me her Hallmark datebook, and I was amazed. She had used only one of its 36 pages, but she had jotted down a birthday party, a dentist's appointment for her child, a church dinner, a parent-teacher's meeting, a bridge lunch, a white sale, whatever that is, a friend's anniversary. Why, a whole month of her life was there on that one page. She refers to it constantly for everything she wants to remember. You see, there's space beside each date of the year for notations. Room for names and addresses. A big section for your Christmas card list. Yet this useful little book is so cleverly arranged, it's small enough to slip into your purse and so beautiful you'll be proud to carry it everywhere. I don't know how long your dealer supply will last, but I wouldn't take a chance on waiting. It's a big disappointment to miss something wonderful that you might as well have had absolutely free if only you'd asked for it in time. Tomorrow, stop at the store where you buy Hallmark cards and ask for your 1948 Hallmark datebook. It will be given to you free, a beautiful little present from your friendly Hallmark dealer.
Thank you, Cy Harris. And now, once again, here is the star of tonight's show, Roger Pryor. You certainly brought John Erickson out of obscurity tonight, Roger.
Thanks, Les. I hope so. The man was really amazing.
Indeed he was. Why, except for a bad break, he, not Stevenson, would be famous as the father of the steam locomotive. His little iron ship, the Monitor, turned the course of the Civil War. The screw propeller he invented made our huge modern navies possible. And yet how many people ever heard of him?
It certainly is a strange story. And from advance reports, you have another strange story next week.
An entirely different kind. A dramatic story from a lost diary. A girl torn between love and fear and caught in one of the most terrifying adventures that ever befell a woman. And like tonight's story, it actually happened. It's true.
Who's your star, Les?
Geraldine Fitzgerald.
Oh, she's wonderful. I'll certainly be listening.
We hope all our friends will be listening next week when the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you a story of high adventure from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. Lady for Ransom, starring Geraldine Fitzgerald.
Was supported by Margaret Curtis in the role of Mary. The Strange Story of John Erickson was dramatized by Robert Senadella and was based on a true story by Owen Johnson as it appeared in the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Sloan, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. To be doubly sure of the finest quality, always look on the back of your cards for those three identifying words, a Hallmark card. Hallmark cards are sold only by selected quality stores, never sold from door to door. Remember Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best.
And now this is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine, saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time. See you then.
Casting.